Hi, everyone. Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. You know by now that the mission in my work is to empower people to make informed food choices, to debunk myths about veganism, to be a voice for animals, and to give people the tools and resources they need to live according to their own values of compassion and kindness. As we enter the 13th year of Food for Thought podcast, which is an award-winning podcast, thanks to you, it won Veg News Magazine's awards again this year for best podcast. I thought it merited a rebroadcasting of some favorite episodes and some episodes that just merit re-listening. So you can always subscribe to Food for Thought. Please do so at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also subscribe to Animology, the spinoff podcast of Food for Thought. And of course, you can follow me on social media. And because of you, this podcast is going on 13 years later. So I appreciate your support, the support of everyone who's a Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGoudreau and help it go on for yet another year. And just keep in mind that inevitably, after all these years, some websites I may mention on the podcast episodes may be defunct. Certainly, I am not Compassionate Cooks anymore. You can just find my work at ColleenPatrickGoudreau.com or JoyfulVegan.com. Just keep in mind that while some websites may be dated, the information itself is not. And so I give you this podcast episode of the award-winning Food for Thought podcast. Enjoy. Today's topic is masculinity and meat. As I continually discuss in my work, misconceptions about vegan food abound, including the notion that vegan food is a category unto itself. We put normal food and regular food, right, as animal-based meat, dairy, and eggs in one category. We put vegan food in another as if the latter were its own alien food group. We also, in our culture, are taught that quote-unquote vegan food is unsubstantial and lacking. Sometimes people talk about it as being reserved for health nuts. She's a health nut. She's vegan. She's a health nut. Or, oh, she's allergic. She's allergy prone, right? So she's allergic. She's vegan, right? That kind of concept. Or people talk about it in terms of it being for the weak. And this comes out in a number of different ways, specifically in terms of plant foods being associated with being effeminate or unmanly, while animal products imply masculinity. And the meat industry certainly perpetuates this metaphor, and we're going to talk more about this. But just check out how prevalent this idea is that meat implies masculinity and vegetables and plant foods imply unmanliness or effeminateness. Just check this out, how we perpetuate this in our language without even knowing we do. I think even those of us who are conscious of how we speak, we're not even aware of the language, the idioms, the words we use that perpetuate these myths. And yet we do it all the time. We disparage plant foods by associating them with weakness and other negative attributes, and we attribute concepts of manliness and strength and virility to animal products. So check this out. If someone is lazy, what do we call them? We call them a couch potato, right? Calling someone a fruit or fruity has been a negative slur against homosexuals since about 1935. If you're a fruit, you're homosexual. Derogative term. If someone is brain dead, if someone's literally brain dead, they're called a vegetable, which is interesting because the root of the word vegetable is vegere, which means active, vigorous, lively, or to quicken. So it really means life. So it's kind of interesting that we use the word vegetable when we talk about someone being in a vegetative state or to be a vegetable, right? As in being brain dead, even though the word vegetable means life. And that term has been used in that way since 1893. So it's been around for a while. To go bananas is to go crazy. If something's bananas, it's crazy. To go nuts is also to go crazy. That goes back to 1846. A lemon is a flawed or worthless item when you call, like, you know, a car, an old car, a lemon. That goes back to about 1909. If someone is full of beans, they're ignorant or they're ill-informed. And if something is not worth a hill of beans, it's worthless. It's just utterly worthless. If someone is pea-brained, they're stupid, right? Can you think of others? I'd love to hear others if you have some in mind, or as you start paying attention to this, you might discover some. I would love to have those comments on the show notes for this episode. Now, not every plant-based idiom is negative, right? When something is plum, it's perfectly aligned. If something is peachy, it's excellent. And when life is a bowl of cherries, it's a really good life. So there, of course, are positive idioms that use fruit in a positive way, right? But the point is that there aren't as many negative idioms associated with meat or dairy or eggs. We have negative idioms about animals, right? Kill two birds with one stone. There's more than one way to skin a cat. A lot of negative idioms around animals, and I would say violent idioms around animals, about animals, but not as many negative ones that are just associated with meat. And of course, you can go listen to many podcast episodes about how our language does contribute to violence against animals. But there are many associations between meat and strength and courage and manliness and virility. So for instance, if we bring home the bacon, we bring home abundance. To save one's bacon is to rescue someone from a difficult situation or harm. To be a ham is to be amusing and entertaining. Someone who beefs up gets stronger and bigger, right? If you beef up. A beefcake is a buff male model. And ironically and interestingly, a toned female version, by scantily clad female model, is called a cheesecake. Do with that what you will. And if you ask where's the beef, you're asking where the substance of the thing is, right? Though it's true that if you have a beef with someone you have a problem with or a complaint about them, so that is a negative association. So again, it's not that there aren't any negative associations with meat, but there are more negative associations with vegetables and there are more positive associations with meat. Now, of course, those in my generation will remember the mid-1980s Where's the Beef commercials, which became the slogan for Wendy's fast food joint. Can't quite call it a restaurant, in which an elderly woman asks, where's the beef? Demanding more meat from her fast food hamburger and emphasizing the lack of quality in burgers at rival chains. It was a brilliant ad in that it became incredibly popular. The catchphrase itself became incredibly popular. It appeared on shirts and bumper stickers, and it resulted in many commercial sequels with that same woman, the same actress. And it even made its way into the 1984 presidential campaign. Walter Mondale invoked Where's the Beef to slam his rival Gary Hart and his lack of substance during the Democratic primary. And it's still part of our vernacular today. The ad was credited with boosting Wendy's annual revenue by 31%. It was a very successful marketing campaign. And indeed, marketing is exactly the machine that influences consumers, especially when it comes to sexualizing, genderizing, and the masculinizing of meat. The media, of course, and those in the business of selling animal flesh and secretions reinforce the tropes about masculinity and meat unapologetically and to no end. Meat is manly. Tofu is for wimps. Real men eat meat. We're all familiar with that ad campaign. I'm sure you are. Real men eat meat. I mean, sometimes it's depicted as real men eat beef. These are powerful and effective campaigns that really have seeped into our collective and individual consciousness. Now, notice it's such an interesting choice they made. Real men eat meat. It doesn't say men eat meat. It says real men eat meat. The implication, of course, is that if you don't eat meat, you're not a real man. And if you're not a real man, what does that mean? Well, you're a woman, right? It implies that you're feminine. And so in order to be a real man, a masculine man, a manly man, you must eat meat. Now, of course, I've talked about vegans taking back the word meat, call it animal-based meat to distinguish it from grain-based meat, distinguish it from plant-based meat. In the context of today's episode, I'm referring to the word meat specifically as flesh from an animal. So I am using it in that very specific way. So just wanted to give that qualification. Now, I do find it interesting and ironic that ads like these appeal directly to men's self-doubt. Am I a real man? How capable am I? How strong, virile, masculine, fill in the blank am I, right? So when it says real men eat meat, it adds this fear in men. And it speaks to that fear in men. It speaks to their self-doubt. It speaks to their vulnerability. And so appealing to that self-doubt, the ad slogan asserts that to be sure, to crush any doubt or shame, the answer is to eat meat, problem solved. And yet the irony is that in order for it to work, it has to acknowledge and thus appeal to men's vulnerability and insecurity. I find that ironic, but it's working. It is absolutely working. It's also ironic to me because it implies that meat eating comprises all of what makes a man, right? It implies that meat eating is his identity. And of course, that's ridiculous. Surely there are other ways for men to measure themselves. Surely you're a critical thinker who decides for himself. You decide what makes a real man or a masculine, valuable, worthy, loving man, right? I mean, there are hopefully other ways that you measure yourself. Real men think for themselves. Real men evaluate the data in front of them and make determinations accordingly. That's, you know, obviously what makes up men as well. For instance, you know, we know animal-based meat contributes to heart disease, violence against animals, and environmental degradation. So those are the things that, you know, real men consider, are all of the considerations when you're making a choice. Real men align their behavior with their actions. Basing your masculinity on something so trivial as a hamburger is laughable when you get down to it, because, of course, men are made up of more than just this concept of masculinity and eating meat. Now, of course, the other myth this ad campaign perpetuates is that only masculinity makes a man. With this as the implication, it says that men should reject the typically feminine attributes, right? Now, the attributes that tend to be considered feminine are receptivity, compassion, compromise, creativity, openness, right? These are considered feminine qualities, but of course they're held by men. The point is, it's kind of implying that you should, it is implying that you should reject those more feminine attributes that we all, you know, are aware of. Some ads take it to the next level. So if they're implying that to not be a real man is to be a woman, some take it to the next level and say that to not eat meat is to not be a real man. And it implies, well, it doesn't even imply, there are ads that straight out say it, that you're gay if you don't eat meat, right? And that's the ultimate affront to masculinity in terms of that definition of masculinity. And the most egregious example of this was a 2012 campaign by a German marketing company, which shows a steak branded with the words, "Tofu ist schwules Fleisch." Tofu ist schwules Fleisch. It means tofu is gay meat. They made this campaign for a restaurant chain, this German ad company. Now, this ad ultimately wasn't used publicly, but, you know, lots of times advertising companies will present their ads that either get rejected or not, or they test them. So it didn't make it to the public sphere, but it still caused a lot of brouhaha, and understandably so. And it's interesting because I think there's been an increase in these particular messages. I don't have television, so I'm not really paying attention as much as other people might be to the messages about meat and masculinity, and even the advertisements for more and more vegan foods on TV. I mean, that's an exciting development. And I think they go hand in hand. But I do hear about these ads, and because I'm, you know, doing my own research and I'm, you know, just hearing about them from social media, and I am aware of these ads, and more of them seem to really be playing up this concept of disparaging foods that are associated with vegetarianism and veganism, and, you know, really playing up the masculinity myth around meat. Now, of course, we already know how widespread the myth that eating tofu or any soybean-based foods will make men grow breasts. I mean, that's the ultimate demasculation. And you can even see the same thing in advertisements for other manly products like beer, such as in a Bud Light commercial in which men are shamed for being able to pronounce the word quinoa. Now, I say it's interesting because I think it's a reaction to the increased prevalence of vegetarianism and veganism in the public and in the marketplace. In other words, it's because of the success of veganism in the market that the animal exploitation industries have to work harder to sell their products. So that's one way I see it. Of course, I see it in a positive way. Can't help it. But marketers, of course, take this trope very seriously. So it's working for them, and they're spending a lot of money because they're making a lot of money at it. And they use it every chance they can because a lot of money is at stake. And so the meat companies hire advertising and marketing firms to reinforce these myths, which are then reinforced in our own consciousness. Then marketers see that it's something the public believes, and they reinforce it even more. It's a cycle that plays continually, and the data and the surveys and the stereotypes and the studies show that it's working. One such study at the University of Pennsylvania, the results of the study were published in the Journal of Consumer Research, asked 384 students to indicate how male and how female they believed certain food products to be. When it came to maleness, medium rare steak, hamburger, and well-done steak ranked in the top three from a list of 23 foods. As for the foods the students considered the most female, sushi, chocolate, peaches, and chicken salad dominated. Roast chickens, however, were considered more male. The less a meat was prepared or tinkered with, the more it retained its male association, which is also interesting because the implication is that women are preparing the food, so the more you turn it into something that's farther away from this whole animal, the more that it's become feminized, right? That's kind of the guess as to why roast chickens were considered male, but chicken salad was considered female, right? Another study further analyzed 23 languages that use gendered pronouns, and the researchers found that across the majority of languages, meat was related to the masculine gender. Not all, because carne, my understanding, if I know my romance languages, it's la, it's a feminine, it's le, la, la carne. But anyway, I didn't do the study, but they did say that across 23 languages with gendered pronouns, the researchers found that across the majority of languages, meat was related to the masculine gender. Hamburger was assigned as male in 93.4% of the cases. Steak was male in 76.3%, and frankfurters in 71.9% of the cases. Researchers from Bellarmine University in Louisville, Kentucky, also found that men believe eating meat makes them more manly. Professor Hank Rothgerber, who published his research in the journal Men and Masculinity, said, quote, "Meat consumption is a symbol of patriarchy resulting from its long-held alliance with manhood, power, and virility," and went on to say that he found that, quote, "men expressed more favorable attitudes toward eating meat, denied animal suffering, believed that animals were lower in a hierarchy than humans, and provided religious and health justifications for consuming animals, and also believed that it was human destiny to eat meat." These are direct, this is still quoting, "these are direct, unapologetic strategies that embrace eating meat and justify the practice." So that's what this professor concluded and found based on his research. In another study called Meat, Morals, and Masculinity, researchers from the University of British Columbia revealed that vegetarian men are seen as wimps and less macho than those who eat steak. This perception was held even by women who didn't eat meat themselves. That's how entrenched the stereotype is in our individual and collective psyches, that even vegetarian women, according to this study, perceived vegetarian men as less macho, right? So, why is this? Where did this myth come from? This myth that meat symbolizes manhood, this myth that meat is a metaphor for manliness. Of course, animal-based meat has long been considered a symbol of privilege and power, masculinity and machismo, especially in the United States. And really more than just a symbol, to be honest, it very much is a product of privilege in the sense that it is very expensive to produce, though you wouldn't know it because it costs so little to buy due to government subsidies. But it is a very expensive product to produce. So it is very much a product of privilege and affluence. And it is dependent upon the exploitation and domination and killing of those with less power. Animals. So men boast about being a meat and potatoes guy and they assert their power and masculinity. And this has become a stereotype that is ingrained in our culture. So where did it start? Now, collectively, we all have this image of what it was like in, you know, Paleolithic times. We have these ideas of Neanderthal cavemen taking down 2,000-pound animals or 3,000-pound animals, dragging women by their hair, beating their chests. I mean, this is kind of what we have all characterized, caricature, I would say, of these people. But this is our own construct. It doesn't really reflect reality. The fact is, and this is, I think this is interesting to at least just consider, as far as we can glean from anthropological evidence, Neanderthal women also took part in hunting and other missions of strength and prowess. We can surmise this from their very muscular, stocky bodies that they can create based on the skeletons they find. And the point I'm making is that we've devised this story about Neanderthal man and meat and masculinity, but it's not that clear cut. And plus, that is our own current construct anyway. Women, too, had the ability to kill animals. They had the weapons and they had the will. The point is that there's nothing inherently male about meat. It's a metaphor that we have created and we continue to perpetuate. There's nothing male about meat. Now, the division of labor based on gender most likely took place because it was too costly from a reproductive standpoint for women to continue hunting. Pregnant and nursing women, or those raising small children, they had much more to lose. And so it made sense that they tended toward foraging and cooking, not because plants are feminine and meat is masculine, but because the reproductive costs of hunting are too high. Men have less to lose. But of course, this is all moot in a time when the majority of animals people consume are killed in ways that have nothing to do with the ideals of strength, courage, or bravery, ideals associated with the hunt. The entire meat industry is built upon genetic and reproductive manipulation, exploitation, confinement, psychological and physical torture, and institutionalized violence. Where's the courage in that? Where's the strength? Where's the honor? In fact, I talked about this in one of my KQED radio opinion pieces a couple of years ago. They ultimately, my editor, called it Slaughterhouse, and you can find it at joyfulvegan.com under radio editorials, under podcast and radio. And what I talked about was, provided what we know about the social psychological connections between animal abuse and human violence, there are data that suggest that a cold mentality toward animal life, a mentality necessitated by systematic killing of animals, in turn cheapens regard for human life. Is that what men want to be associated with? Because really, eating meat is not about virility and prowess. It's about exploitation, desensitization, violence, and cruelty. Not only is there nothing inherently male about the rotting corpses of animals, but because of prominent gender roles, women still do most of the grocery shopping. So what's kind of even funny to me is that men aren't even the ones buying most of the meat. Women are. Now, I'm making broad generalizations, so please, I'm not saying that men don't buy meat and men don't do shopping and men don't cook, but we're still talking about the majority of people in households where women are doing the cooking and women are doing the shopping still. That's just a fact. So the point is that this idea that men are somehow participating in some kind of rite or some kind of ritual of strength and virility, A, no, they're not. B, what they're supporting is a system of cruelty and violence and desensitization. And C, they're not even buying it. Like, they're actually, you know, for the most part, the women are actually buying the cellophane packaged body parts, right? But it is true that men are eating more of it. Now, amongst meat eaters in general, according to the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey from 2003-2004, that's the most recent data, data shows that on average, men consume 153.8, so 153.8 grams of meat a day, while women eat women eat 103.2 grams of meat. So 150 for men and 100 for women. According to a 2008 study carried out by the Harris Interactive Bureau on behalf of the Vegetarian Times, 3.2% of American adults are vegetarians. This number might be different now. This was, like I said, back in 2008. And 41% of the 7.3 million are male. So even though there are more female vegetarians than male, I think that's actually a closer number than I thought it was going to be. So I guess that gives me hope. There's my positive spin on it again. And I'll just repeat what I'm saying here is that of the 3.2% of American adults who identified as vegetarian, 41% of that 7.3 million, that's the number that the 3.2% comprises, of that 7.3 million, 41% of them are male. So I guess that's, to me, I mean, it's, you know, it's not 50-50, it's 60-40, but, well, actually, it's 59-41, right? I mean, it's even better than 60-40. I'm hopeful because it's closer than I thought it would be. I think, you know, doing this research and talking about this, I think you'd think, gosh, it's probably 80-20, but it's closer than that. So that gives me hope as well. Now, of course, the meat industry uses all of these data to perpetuate the meat is masculine myth even more, showing seemingly weak, wimpy men buying tofu or pronouncing quinoa, and then showing buff, muscular, manly men eating steak, right? I mean, that's this typical trope that we see all the time. So what do we do with all of this? How do marketers of plant-based foods or advocates of a vegan lifestyle counteract this and sell their own concepts or their own products? And even more fundamentally, how do parents of boys persuade them to eat more vegetables, whether they're vegan or not? Because there's evidence that aversion to vegetables and fruit starts early in the life of a boy who associates meat with masculinity. Now, they're exposed to all of these cultural messages, and they internalize this myth very quickly. And parents might not even be aware that they are perpetuating this myth and their child is internalizing it. So what do we do? And of course, I do not have all the answers, but I do have some thoughts. On one hand, number one, we're seeing a lot of advocates putting forth a depiction of very masculine, buff, muscular vegan men, right? Vegan bodybuilding is a very hot trend right now. And frankly, it's not just vegan male bodybuilders and body sculptors who are strutting their toned bodies. It's women too. So we are seeing that as well. So great. That's fantastic. I think it's great. I think it's great because images of huge, strong, muscular vegan men will attract other men and women who didn't think you could be muscular on plants. So that's a good thing. Providing models for someone to look at and to be inspired by is a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. I think the only issue I have with it is, well, A, I personally don't feel we have to prove anything about what it means to be vegan. Authentically being yourself that attracts others is one thing, but sometimes I perceive there being this constant need to say, see, this is what vegan looks like. See, this is what vegan looks like. When in reality, that's what one vegan looks like, or that one vegan. It doesn't represent all vegans. And I've talked about this before when I've talked about body image and fat shaming in the vegan community. I'm not less vegan because I'm not 100 pounds and perfectly toned, and my husband isn't less vegan because he doesn't have a six pack. I think I just outed David for not having a six pack. So don't tell him that I outed him. I could pretend he has a six pack, but David doesn't have a six pack. And, you know, we're not perfectly toned vegans, but that doesn't make us less vegan. The point is, at least I'll speak for myself, I don't have to prove anything about being vegan. B, the other thought I have is that there seems to be this drive to prove that vegetarian and vegan men are also manly, which is still defined by the stereotypical concept of what is masculine in our culture. In other words, I would just suggest that we perpetuate broad and healthy definitions. Not that being fit and being toned is not healthy. I'm saying I would just like to see that we continue perpetuating broader definitions of what masculinity is in our culture. I know our vegan bodybuilding friends are doing this. I'm not saying they're not, so please don't write and say, oh my God, they care about animals too, and they're just showing one side. I get it. I'm just offering my perspective on how we can create a broader definition of masculinity in our culture. I think it's important. In other words, all I'm saying is I don't think the solution is only to necessarily prove that vegan is macho and vegetables are manly. I think we also want to define masculinity as more than just muscles and machismo, emphasizing the other qualities that characterize real men, such as strength of character, honesty, integrity, truthfulness, sensitivity, intelligence, openness, kindness, and compassion. Those are qualities that I think characterize real men, and those are the ones that I just want us to be emphasizing in terms of how we talk about what vegan men look like. And again, I'm not saying that we're not doing this, but I also see us continuing to define masculinity in a pretty narrow way. You don't need a six-pack, even when built from plants, to be masculine. Second idea, number two, what we're seeing happening is that we market plant foods in a way that depicts them as masculine. Okay, I can't pretend that we're not all victims of marketing campaigns, so I guess this will help. I just find it ridiculous that we have to genderize food and persuade people that vegetables are masculine, but it worked with Popeye, right? Popeye helped sell spinach, and I do love that the spinach-eating Popeye was strong and that the hamburger-eating Wimpy was wimpy, and you know, it worked. Like, so I love that iconic figure. for spinach. The spinach growers credited Popeye with a 33% increase in U.S. spinach consumption and credited it with saving the spinach industry in the 1930s. Now, just to compare, I told you earlier that Wendy's saw their revenue boosted by 31% with their Where's the Beef commercials. And of course, I'd be interested in the numbers behind the marketing success of other ad campaigns. But the point is that Popeye's popularity resulted in the increase of sales in spinach. So clever marketing ads and iconic figures that depict vegetables in a favorable, and I guess in this case, masculine light. Sure, we don't live in a vacuum. I get that. So it can only help to change the stereotypes. It's just ridiculous to me that we have to masculinize spinach to sell it or genderize food at all. But we already do this. I get it. It's just silly to me. Even the prevalence of this whole like man versus food concept we see on a lot of TV shows. We see it in food competitions where men compete in eating, you know, huge portions of meat, hot dogs, burgers, sausages, right, in these contests. And there are food competitions around like desserts as well, like pies and ice cream. But I've never seen a broccoli eating contest. And if there were one, I bet there would be few male contestants. But we can change that. We can have, I guess, eating contests for plant foods. But I see some of this happening. It's just so funny to me because I see more VegFest hosting vegan hot dog eating contests or other vegan food contests and competitions, usually centered around vegan meats, not broccoli, because that's what the conventional non-vegan contest would comprise, right? It would be meat, you know, animal-based meats. So they're doing these non-animal, you know, vegan meats. And it's sure, if that works, great. It's just so ridiculous. I actually think food eating contests are just stupid acts of gluttony. But if vegan versions help promote vegan foods and establish it as male, I guess that's a good thing. I just lament that the culture we live in dictates that we do this. It's just me being cranky. That's just my opinion. I just think food competitions are ridiculous. In one of the articles about the research done on maleness and meat, one of the suggestions from marketers counteracting these powerful associations was to address the metaphors that shape consumer attitudes. For example, and this is a quote, for example, an education campaign that urges people to eat more soy or vegetables would be a tough sell, but reshaping soy burgers to make them resemble beef or giving them grill marks might help cautious men make the transition, the researchers report. So, you know, we've talked about this. I've talked about this when I've talked about vegan meats. I've talked about food scientists. There's a reason food scientists and vegan companies are making vegan meats look like non-vegan meats, look like animal-based meat. There's a strong association there, not only in terms of familiarity, but because of all these psychological undercurrents, all of these subconscious associations we all have with meat, with animal-based meat. Some of those associations say, you know, again, subconsciously, masculinity, strength, virility, right? If that's the metaphor that goes off for them in their brains when they see animal-based meat, if the non-animal-based meat looks the same and it triggers the same metaphors for them, then it's working. It's fine. Like, I'd love this world to be more aligned with my thinking, right? But like I said, I can't make this world be what I want it to be. I can't make this world switch and see like, that doesn't matter. Do you realize even if you eat a vegan burger that looks like a non-vegan burger, like you're not more masculine just because of that? However, I can't change that. I mean, I can try and continue having that conversation and saying that does not define your masculinity, and I'm doing it here. And if that's going to work, then go for it. The vegan food companies who are doing this work are doing fabulous job at this. And, you know, all the food porn that's on websites these days, I mean, all these, you know, burgers, these really rich looking vegan burgers with, you know, sauces dripping and just piled high. And that, sure, if that evokes a certain mood or metaphor for people, and that means that men will say, yeah, I could eat that because that's going to confirm my masculinity, then fine. I get it. I absolutely get it. If vegan hot dog eating contests make threatened meat eaters feel more manly, then sure, go for it. It's just ironic to me because conforming to social dictates and being afraid to challenge stereotypes doesn't signify strength and autonomy and independence. Conformity and fear are the opposite of strength, autonomy, and independence. But if it works, go for it. One more observation related to men feeling that their man card will be taken away from them if they become vegan or if they stop eating meat, even if it's just if they become vegetarian, animal-based meat. I've talked about this before on the podcast. I talk about it in the 30-Day Vegan Challenge. when someone finds out that I'm vegan, someone who doesn't know me, and they know I'm married, they invariably ask if my husband is vegan too. I say he is. And then they ask if he was vegan before he met me. I say he was not. Next, they usually say something like, so you converted him. And as you know, I say no, because I do not like the word convert, because it implies that I set out with some evangelical agenda to make him do something I wanted him to do. So although I do not believe I converted him, there's no question that I was the one who inspired him to become vegan. I happen to be the person in his life who had the information and the enthusiasm that inspired him to explore the issues that I guided him through. And once he was persuaded by the same arguments I was, he became vegan. And that's how relationships work. That's why we come together, I think, to enrich each other's lives, to become better people, to learn more, to evolve. And I think sometimes when people ask if I converted David, they want somehow to invalidate his decision. I know some people think that he's doing it for me. Now, I don't know if people still feel that way now because it's been so long, but possibly someone who doesn't know our relationship, right? Or someone who just meets David may think, his wife's vegan. His wife's a vegan educator and author. Yeah, he's just doing it for her, quote unquote, right? And he's secretly craving a steak, implying that my husband doesn't have his own mind or his own will or conscience. And I find that incredibly insulting. The fact is, my husband learns things from me in our relationship, and I learn things from him. That's the way it works. We come together to become better people. But I think that's ultimately what happens, that some men, feeling threatened, feeling like their man card is going to be taken away, they're also going to be perceived as being weak, as being a more polite version of being whipped. And I think that's some of what is happening. But as I said, to me, there are so many characteristics of what makes up a man, what makes up masculinity, that defines masculinity. And I think all of us need to define that, not only in terms of what we appreciate and who we love being around, but for men to really define what masculinity means to them. And I think they may find a very different answer if they explore this than hamburger makes me a man. So that's all I got. Let's end on that note. And thank you to all of you listeners who are supporting this podcast and other content that I provide. If you are confident in the impact this work has in the world, and I think you should be confident, because I continue to be blessed by so many letters from so many of you that is just so beautiful. Here's one from Priyal, who wrote, "Hi, Colleen. My sister-in-law got me into your website and podcast as I've recently had my awakening into the joys of being vegan. I've been vegetarian my whole life, and one day I had a light bulb moment. It's been a little tough, but thank you for all the work you do. I've been listening to your stages of becoming vegan, and it has been of utmost help. Looking forward to this new journey." Then we have another lovely letter from Amanda. I'll just read a couple lines from it. She said, "Hi, Colleen, I find it hard to know where to begin. You've been a huge influence in my life and the catalyst for transformational change. Thank you for the beautiful work you put into the world. Truly, it changes lives." And then one more, because I know we didn't do our love letters episode this year, but let me read you one more from Gina. "I truly appreciate what you are doing for the animals and for the world. I've been eating mostly vegetarian for a few months and then totally vegan via juicing for a week or so before I discovered your podcast. Wanting to go vegan for good, I searched for podcasts and found yours. I've been binge listening for a few weeks. I love your work. I've been active in the pet rescue movement for years. Although I had wanted to go vegan, I thought it was impossible to be healthy without consuming animal products. Your podcast has given me the confidence that I can do this long term. I'm 40 days in and I've never felt better. Thank you so much for what you do." There is so much hope. There is so much reason to believe that everyone who's standing in front of us is on their own journey and will be influenced and inspired by you standing in your own truth. When we speak our truth, we give others permission to speak theirs as well. And I'm hopeful when I get these letters, because it just confirms that for me. Thank you, everybody who listens. Thank you for sponsoring. Thank you for subscribing to this podcast. If you're confident in the impact this work is having, as I said, please go to joyfulvegan.com, click on the Patreon button or the one-time donation button, become a supporter, go to support under shop. There's lots of ways to find it on the website. You can become a one-time or a monthly supporter for the animals, both human and non-human. This is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. Thanks for listening.